Super Committee Countdown. It is not too early to watch the clock. 2 weeks from today until the deficit reduction deadline. It's the day before Thanksgiving when the bipartisan congressional panel known as the Super Committee is required by law to come up with more than $1 trillion in deficit reduction for the next 10 years, or major cuts to the military and to Medicare spending and other things will automatically take effect, and the nation's credit rating could be further downgraded. So beginning right now, we will follow the Deficit Reduction Committee's progress on a daily basis for the next 2 weeks with explainers, opinion, and political analysis. Yesterday, Mayor Bloomberg gave a speech about the situation and the Super Committee's work. He said the deficit is even worse than most of the public understands.
As we all know, the Super Committee on Deficit Reduction has until November 23rd to come up with recommendations for achieving $1.2 trillion in savings over the next 10 years. Let me put that in perspective for you. That would shrink our deficit by about 13%. That's it, a drop in the bucket. And the federal debt will continue to grow. Agreeing to a $1.2 trillion savings would be just scratching the surface of the problem. And yet, at this moment, amazingly, it appears that the committee is in danger of failing to reach even that low bar as a result of the usual partisan brinksmanship. You know, the term gridlock was invented in New York, but when you come to Washington, you realize that it's been turned into a way of life.
So Mayor Bloomberg yesterday analyzing the situation, he wants more tax hikes and more spending cuts than either party is proposing. Here is about a minute of how the mayor challenges both parties, Democrats first.
Democrats have to accept the fact that there is no ways we can do serious deficit reduction without finding more savings in health care costs as well. For starters, we should adopt tort reform that reduces costs and medical errors, and we should begin moving away from a fee-for-payment system and incentivize spending instead of healthy outcomes. Now, the other side of the aisle. We need Republicans to accept the fact that we have a serious revenue problem, which brings me to the second key principle that I believe can lead us to a pro-growth deficit deal. All income groups have to be part of the solution. It's fair to ask those who earn more to bear more of the burden. That is the whole idea behind a graduated income tax. But all of us should help carry the load. And there is actually a very straightforward and achievable way to do that. Just allow the Bush tax cuts to expire at the end of 2012. Not just for high-income workers, as the president has proposed, but for all tax brackets.
Let the Bush tax cuts expire for everyone. Mayor Bloomberg yesterday. Joining me now to talk about the Super Committee, the European debt crisis, Occupy Wall Street, and more, Phil Angelides, who presided over a contentious bipartisan panel himself as chairman of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, which released its report earlier this year about how we got into this housing and banking mess. Mr. Angelides was previously the California state treasurer and a Democratic gubernatorial candidate against Arnold Schwarzenegger. Mr. Angelides, welcome back to WNYC.
It's good to be with you.
As a former state treasurer, is Mayor Bloomberg right in that first clip about the extent of the problem and $1.2 trillion, which is what the super committee must close by law, being a drop in the bucket?
Well, he's right about the long-term nature of the problem. But the most immediate problem we have in this country, and we cannot close the deficit without dealing with it, is we need to put people back to work at good wages. And the policy focus in Washington and across this country needs to be taking actions that will stimulate job growth. We got 24 million people out of work, can't find full-time work. Wages are at the lowest level of GDP since the Great Depression. And stunningly, you know, as we've come out of this terrible financial crisis, and we're really not, but when the official recovery began, since it began, and I put recovery in quotes, 92% of the nation's growth has gone to corporate profits, zero to wages. So unless we put people back to work at good wages in this country, we'll never close up the deficit. So I think immediate efforts are to stimulate this economy. That will then give us the ability over the next 10 years to make the deficit closing moves we need to make.
But watching unemployment rise through the early part of the Obama administration, despite all the money that was being spent on stimulus, people, the public at large, and even experts are hardly convinced that a government stimulus program is the root to that?
Well, first of all, when the stimulus came in, it wasn't big enough, but it managed to stabilize the economy. Now that it's running out, we're seeing the effects of it. We're seeing that while there are modest gains in the private sector, public payrolls at the federal, state, local level are being slashed. Teachers, firefighters, police officers are being let off all over this country. So in a sense, the cutbacks in the government now are now creating a tremendous drag on the economy. So you have very mainstream economists like Mark Zandi who are pointing out that these cutbacks in public expenditures are very damaging.
But there's a double-edged sword here. I think we're seeing it in Europe as countries like Greece and even the U.K. implement austerity measures to deal with their debts. Their economies are slowing as a result, not growing. That's an indication that at least in the short term, stimulus matters.
Absolutely.
On the other hand, if we keep going into more and more and more and more debt, well, we see the other stuff that Greece and now Italy are going through.
Look, we're in a very tough situation. Let's just kind of call it like it is. Over the decade leading up to 2008, we built an economy built on rampant speculation. The financial sector went from 15% of corporate profits to 33% of corporate profits. We became an economy of money making money and speculation. We created $13 trillion of mortgage securities instead of applying our capital to things that matter: education, infrastructure, technology, investments in renewable energy. And it is not going to be an easy road out. And of course, all this was made worse by two massive tax cuts, two wars we didn't pay for, and then, of course, this financial collapse. So the only route back is to invest in our people to create competitive industries in this country. Germany is an interesting example. They took the high road. They took the high road of manufacturing goods, high wages, high quality. They now have the strongest sustainable economy.
Phil Angelides, chairman of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission, 212-433-WNYC. If you want to get in on this, 212-433-9692 or post to WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehrer Show. I think the super committee has a harder job even than your committee, because you just needed to produce, and I don't mean to denigrate it, but you just needed to produce a report on what happened, like the 9/11 Commission. You didn't have to come up with new laws to raise people's taxes or cut cherished programs. And even then, your commission split along partisan lines. So they really have a hard job, don't they?
Absolutely. And I will say, as someone who's been engaged in public life over a number of decades, half my life in the private sector, half in the public sector, I was taken aback at the kind of the raw venality of Washington politics. I'll also be blunt that I think there's a very hard right-wing core in the Republican Party that eschews any kind of compromise. And even on our commission, I'll just tell you, it was stunning. Our commission's report, that none of the facts of it have been challenged in 9 months. People have disagreed with conclusions. But I was intrigued or disturbed by the ferocity of the fight over historical accuracy, because facts are facts. But, you know, the real challenge we have, I want to say, in this country right now, we have the super committee going. And it is important to begin to close this federal deficit. But we have other pressing debt problems in this country. I mean, probably the single largest pressing debt issue is today middle class families, homeowners, are being crushed under a weight of housing debt. 28% of homeowners with mortgages are underwater. That's $700 billion of negative equity. In Nevada, on an aggregate basis, there's more mortgage debt than the value of homes on which there are mortgages.
Incredible.
In my home state, you know, in Sacramento, my home city, almost 50% of the homes are underwater. They owe more homeowners on their mortgages in their homes. And unless we have a dramatic program of principal reduction that allows people to stay in their homes, begin to spend again, be able to sell their homes, to move for jobs, be able to refinance their homes, we're never going to lift this economy.
President
off.
Obama keeps coming out with anti-foreclosure plan after anti-foreclosure plan, but it's only ever a drop in the bucket. What's going wrong?
Not enough, not forceful enough. The banks aren't being compelled to do what they need to do, and it's really three places. It's the banks, but secondly, it's Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. And, you know, they take the position, well, we don't want to take losses because the taxpayers will bear them. They're going to take them now or they're going to take them later. Because the first wave of foreclosures were all the people to whom banks lend who probably didn't have the credit, or speculators who walked away. Second wave were the millions of people who lost their homes. The biggest wave now are the millions of people who owe 150% more on their home. That's the size of their mortgage. So we will have millions of more foreclosures. So Fannie Mae needs to be part of the solution, not part of the problem. And finally, as part of the securitization mess out of the financial crisis, we created this Frankenstein monster hard to unwind. There needs to be more force applied because this problem is getting worse, not better.
Phil Angelides, former California State Treasurer, Chairman of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. Jan in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hey, Jan, thanks for calling.
Hi. Since you said that Germany was so successful, I'm wondering, why do you think that we don't follow their kind of what they're doing?
Well, you know, it's successful in this regard. They have managed to create, you know, a lot of the rhetoric in this country is we lose jobs because we lose them to lower wage countries. We need to have lower and lower standards. You know, we become a borrowing nation that imports from other places. The Germans have really focused very hard on what I'd call the high road. They have very high regulatory standards, high air pollution standards, you know, high standards, and then they build a set of industries around that to produce high-quality products, pay their workers well, and they end up dominating, in many respects, the high-quality export market. And I think they're just an example that you don't need to take the low road. I saw some numbers yesterday where the U.S. now has one of the biggest gaps in income inequality, certainly of all the developed nations, and we're right up there in terms of income inequality with some of the least developed nations in the world. And I just think unless you have a broad-based middle class getting paid good wages, making products, we're going to always struggle with these massive deficits. We will be a debtor nation.
That's the bottom line message of Occupy Wall Street. When all the smoke clears around all the rhetoric and what's happening at the encampment and are they the Tea Party and blah, 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 they're pointing up inequality in America and raising people's consciousness about inequality in America. What do you think about Occupy Wall Street?
I think they've done this nation an enormous service. This has been, for the last decade, in many respects, the central issue of our economy. This isn't an issue that arose yesterday. It's been exacerbated by the financial crisis. And now the facts are so stark. They're so disturbing. You know, the 10 biggest banks last year controlled 77% of the banking assets in the country. They made $62 billion. CEO pay went up 28%. And meanwhile, we've got the longest length of unemployment in this country since we started keeping record in the 40s. Wages for Americans have stayed stagnant since 1997. We will never have a fully productive society if you've got effectively 10 to 15% of people out of work. And you have families all over who are just scraping to get by, who can't fully participate in the economy. So I think they've hit it, the nail right on the head. And for all those people who say they don't have a platform, I think their platform's pretty clear, pretty direct, and I think most Americans see it.
They have a critique. They have a cultural and economic analysis. But do they have a platform?
Well, let's start with, it seems to me that if you believe that one of the biggest challenges we face in this country is income inequality, and I believe that deeply. It's hobbling us as a whole. As you know, someone say, you really can't have a good home in a devastated neighborhood. In the end, you really can't have a successful business in an unsuccessful economy. By putting their finger on the essential question, it then gets the dialogue going around what do we do and what has been missing from the dialogue in this country. Or what are the things we need to do to close the opportunity gap? It just hasn't been center. And look at the last year. We even started today talking about the super committee, talking about a 10-year debt problem, which will not be cured unless we get more people to work at better wages, get revenues up to the society as a whole.
Tom in Essex Fells, you're on WNYC. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Brian. My thought is that President Obama should let the Bush tax cuts expire, and he should let the automatic spending cuts in the special committee go into effect. It's probably the fairest deal we're going to get in both counts, and we'll raise significant money to deal with the deficit and then move forward the country, campaign finance reform and stimulus for the economy.
Tom, thank you. And he's kind of up the alley of what Mayor Bloomberg was saying yesterday that we started with. To my eye, Bloomberg is being more Republican than the Republicans and more Democratic than the Democrats. He wants to end the Bush tax cuts for everyone, not just the wealthy, which is what some of the most progressive economists want, to produce a lot more revenue. And he wants to end Medicare as we know it by ending government reimbursement on a fee-for-service basis and giving recipients a spending cap. So what do you think about Mayor Bloomberg's basic take? Is this the way to go?
Well, I think he's wrong on the tax front. I'll tell you why. I think he's wrong because he forgets the fact that lower wage and middle income wagers already pay the payroll tax, but for the holiday, which is essentially a regressive tax. They pay that more heavily. They pay sales taxes. They're very much participants in this economy. And I would offer that families who are making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000 a year are struggling to get by. And that's not the group of Americans we want to put even more pressure on. So I disagree in that respect. Do I believe we need to curb health care costs? Absolutely. But I also think there's a timing here. The focus today ought to be on how you lift this economy up. Because I'll tell you again, one more time, and I tell this to Mayor Bloomberg, if in fact you have persistent 9 to 10% unemployment, and with underemployment 13 to 14%, if you have this crushing debt on American homeowners where they can't refinance their homes, they can't spend for consumer goods, they're not going to be able to borrow to send their kids to college, those kind of crushing debts will mean that this economy cannot lift off.
So in the short term, public works projects, FDR-style civilian conservation corps and things like that?
I think a variety. You know, as Roosevelt said, we'll try something. If it doesn't work, we'll try something else. And we haven't had that. And in some ways, I do think the Obama administration and Tim Geithner and the folks who came in undersized the nature of what we're going through. These financial crises like this, like 1929, 2008, these are not typical recessions. They tend to last 7 to 10 years with very deep consequences.
Yikes.
So we need to size our solutions to be big enough to pull us out. So I'll just give you one example. We ought to be making massive investments in renewable energy. China gets it. They've gone in. We're still a net exporter, by the way, in solar panels, but not for long. China has gone from making 6% of the world's solar panels to 60%, and they're giving massive assistance to that new industry because they see it as an industry of the future. We better have a national economic policy or we're not going to be able to compete.
One more thing about Mayor Bloomberg. Last week, in disagreeing with Occupy Wall Street, he in effect disagreed with you and the conclusions of your Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. Of course, the occupiers blame the banks for the crisis that we're in, but Mayor Bloomberg put the blame somewhere else.
Some of them are totally unfounded. It was not the banks that created the mortgage crisis. It was plain and simple Congress who forced everybody to go and to give mortgages to people who were on the cusp. Now, I'm not so sure that was terrible policy because a lot of those people who got homes still have them, and they wouldn't have had them without that. But they were the ones that pushed Fannie and Freddie to make a bunch of loans that were imprudent, if you will. They were the ones that pushed the banks to loan to everybody. And now we want to go vilify the banks because it's one target. It's easy to blame them.
So that wasn't great audio, but it was worth playing.
It
was
It echoed across the country.
That's right. It was government policy on a bipartisan basis, starting in the 90s, to expand home ownership to poor people who might not previously have qualified for mortgages that started all of this.
Let me jump in.
You disagree?
Yeah, absolutely. Not only do I disagree, I mean either the mayor's ignorant of the facts or he's deliberately trying to deflect attention from Wall Street. Because here's the facts. We had a bipartisan commission. We didn't agree on everything. But 9 of 10 commissioners, including 3 of the 4 Republicans, agreed that the Community Reinvestment Act, which required banks not to make unsound loans, but to lend in areas that they had previously redlined, that they'd barred lending in. 9 of 10 commissioners, 3 of 4 Republicans, agreed this was not a significant factor. 9 of 10 commissioners, 3 of 4 Republicans, agreed that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac were not the moving cause here. And the data is clear. And just as one example, when he says Congress pushed the banks, he was referring, I think, to the Community Reinvestment Act. Well, the fact is that the most aggressive, pernicious subprime lenders in the country, whether it was New Century or Ameriquest or a lot of the other subprime boiler rooms, they weren't even subject to that act. And the data is also very clear that while Fannie and Freddie were a disaster, they're costing the taxpayers money, the default rates from their loans, even for comparable loans made to comparable borrowers, is about 1/4 the rate as the stuff that was produced on Wall Street. So the mayor is just plain wrong, and I think what I'll do is send him an autographed copy of my book.
I'm sure he
would
like to see it.
Our commission's report.
He's probably read it. I'm sure he's read it. Vered in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Yes, hi. Good morning. I'd like to ask about the, for the past decades, we've been, the labor force has been shrinking and shrinking. And what's going on now, I think another factor is structural changes, where a lot of these jobs are just not going to come back. And in decades ahead of us, we're going to have a totally new type of economy. So what do we do with these people who will not find jobs? What happens to them?
Well, so first of all, I don't accept the notion that we have to accept the fact that we're going to be a place with less and less economic opportunity. I mentioned, for example, the renewable energy sector. Right now, as a nation, we send $400 billion a year overseas to foreign regimes for oil, many of those regimes hostile to our values. By the way, there's no small reason we have a military presence all over the Middle East that costs us hundreds of billions of dollars. That's about half our trade deficit is foreign oil. That's an industry we can grow. We've added about 100,000 workers to the renewable energy industry in the last several years. There are other places we still have, you know, Silicon Valley's doing well still today because we have the lead in technology. We need to find the places where we can win and compete. And I might add that if, in fact, there is a global carbon tax, which I think there will be, other nations will be ahead of us, it will put a premium on shorter supply lines as transportation costs go up, and we can bring manufacturing back home.
Vered, thank you for your call. Before you go, as an Angelides, I take it you're Greek-American?
Yeah, very much so.
Do you have any ties to Greece?
Absolutely.
To comment on the Greek debt crisis as more than an observer?
Yes, and I have a lot of family there. I have the following big observation. Right now, the world seems to be being run for the lenders. Every effort's being made in the U.S. and in Europe to protect all the lenders who made reckless loans. This is not to excuse the borrowers.
But on the other hand, if you let the lenders absorb all these what they like to call haircuts on all this sovereign debt all over Europe, then these banks, who are the lenders, are going to have less money to lend to small business. There's going to be even more of a squeeze on the private economy, isn't
there?
Well,
so first of all, take the 10 big U.S. banks. They made $62 billion last year. I'm not crying for them. And the losses will be incurred. The question is, who's going to bear them? In America, is it going to just be homeowners, or are we going to ask the Wall Street banks to take some of the loan? In Europe, same question. So where do I think today? I think Greece is going to have a very hard time meeting the 50% haircut. You have 20% unemployment. It is in Europe's interest, and I think a lot of German exporters see this, to do what you can to try to get Greece on the road to recovery versus driving them down this pit of austerity.
Quickly, I know you have to go. Italy, there aren't enough euros in Berlin or anywhere else to bail out Italy like they're doing with Greece.
Yeah, look, this financial crisis did not end in September of 2008. There was profligate lending all over the world. We are now bearing the burden of that. The real question is, how do you fairly allocate losses? And it can't all be borne by working people. Capital, the people who participate in this, have got to bear some of the losses. And up till now, they're being wholly protected.
Phil Angelides was chairman of the Financial Crisis Inquiry Commission. You have something else going? You're going to run for office again or anything?
Not today, not tomorrow. I'm actually, you know, in the private sector. I'm in renewable energy. I still stay very involved in public policy, and I hope to be one American just lending my voice to this debate.
Thanks for coming back in.
Great to be here.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, our Bob Henley comes in to tell us why it was a surprisingly good election day for Democrats. Stay tuned.